Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, family, and welcome once again to the Dare to Win, Us Lifting Us Dare to Win Thursday night call. We're here every Thursday night from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And every week we do have very vital information that helps us to gain greater clarity to what we must do to gain control and in the case of us lifting us, economic control through cooperative economics. And I am a Us Lifting Us member. I'm Brother Thurman, and I'm on the line with Brother Unkti, that's also a Us Lifting Us guest. And tonight's topic that we had posted is Liberating Minds, Building Liberated Communities for the Liberation of Our People. And that topic is very, very broad and covers many, many areas that's necessary for us to be liberated. And among the subjects that we must delve into and define and bring clarity is our worldview. And Brother Unkti, welcome to the call tonight. Give your greeting to the family.
Greetings to the Ulu family. Always good to be on Dare to Win. Always excited about the work that we're doing. And I'm excited about liberated minds building liberated communities for the liberation of our people. So glad to be here and look forward to our conversation, Brother Thurman.
Yes, me too. Thank you. And so we had focused under that topic, Liberated Minds, Building Liberated Communities for the Liberation of Our People. And we had said that we would discuss worldview in particular, and that ranges into many areas, but certainly it would cover African worldview. What would you like to start us off on concerning the topic of worldview?
Thank you for the question. I was listening to a clip earlier today from Brother Marcus Mosiah Garvey, who was stressing the fact that we have to first see ourselves as a people, see ourselves exercising our own agency and our own power, once we have that visual and mental image of carrying ourselves that way in the world, then we can begin to manifest the kinds of institutions that we need to build for ourselves. And so it struck me that the first part, one of the first topics we need to talk about is world view. There's the African psychologist Frantz Fanon makes the statement that to take on a language is to take on a worldview. And that is why when Europeans invaded the African continent, what they were certainly sure to do in all of the places that they set up camp was to change the language of the people to the language of the colonizers. So if the geographic area was being colonized by the British, then they imposed English on the people. If it was being colonized by the French, they imposed French. And if it was being colonized by Spanish, they imposed Spanish, or Portuguese, or German, or whatever the colonizer's language was the language that was imposed upon the people that they were overcoming. And so when we talk about worldview, what we're talking about is how a people see the world in which they live. Not only how they see the world, but where they see themselves in the world. Are they exercising control and leadership? Are they dominated and subservient? All of these things factor into a people's worldview, and it's when we say liberated minds building liberated communities, the first work of liberation is to free our minds, to liberate the mind from the ways of thinking and knowing that have been given to us by those who have invaded the motherland and have conquered us. So worldview is foundational to how people think. And what I find very interesting, Brother Thurman, is that I first came across this whole conversation around worldview when I joined the Congress of African People in 1973, I think it was, and was in Newark, New Jersey. It was under the leadership of Dr. Malana Karenga and Amiri Baraka. And we were studying from Dr. Malana Karenga's book, A Black Value System, the Nguza Saba. And we spent every meeting, we opened with a recitation of the Black Value Systems, Umoja, Kujichagulia, Ujima, Ujamaa, Nia, Kuumba, Imani. So unity, self-determination, collective work and responsibility, cooperative economics, creativity, and faith. And we drill those into our minds at every opportunity. Why? Because we discovered later that having been raised up in the United States, we had an internalized value system that didn't work for us, and we weren't even aware of the fact that it was running in the background of our minds. And as we began to understand more and more what these black values were and how they operate, we discovered that Dr. Karenga devised those black values from studying African civilizations. He scoured the breadth and length of the African continent. He looked at hundreds and thousands of community groups and villages and peoples. And in all of them, he discovered these seven cardinal values that they all had and expressed in different ways. They all had a sense of the oneness of the universe. They all had a sense of being self-determining, not defining themselves and speaking for themselves and not letting other people do that. There was a general understanding of all the work was done collectively and that it was best accomplished collectively rather than individually, that the economic mechanisms had to be cooperative in nature and essence. that creativity was just a natural aspect of what it is to be an African man or woman. We just naturally created. We're going to find new ways and exciting ways to do whatever it is that we need to do, whether it's dance, whether it's music, whether it's art, whether it's the work of building a shelter or growing food. The African is always going to do it in a creative and exciting and new and innovative way. And then, of course, I think most of us can attest to the fact that we can grow up in America and live the first 18, 20 years of our lives and not really have a very clear purpose of why we're here. We can even live 20 or 40 years of our lives and still be trying to answer the question, you know, what is my purpose on the planet? But in the African mindset, purpose had to do with understanding we came from the invisible realm onto the physical plane on a mission that we and the Creator agreed that we would do while we were on the physical plane. And so even the naming of our children captured the idea of this child has a purpose, and the name that was given to the child reflected that purpose and gave the child an orientation that would guide them through life. So we had purpose, we had creativity, and we had faith, this just solid, inherent knowing that there was a supreme being that guided all of us, that we were each connected to, and that was working on behalf of us, helping us to accomplish our purpose. So when we talk about worldview, we have to talk about first what are the values that our society is founded upon. In other words, the bedrock of all worldviews is a value system. So I would ask who our listeners tonight, Brother Thurman, what value system did they grow up under? I was, in my 20s when I ran across the Black value system, the Nguza Saba, developed by Dr. Karenga. So what were the values that I had up until then? Because that value system is still in place in a lot of us, and we're not fully in touch with it, and we wind up making choices and decisions that are embedded in that value system, and we are disconnected from our African selves and wonder why, it's difficult for us to work in groups and to accomplish big projects together without falling out with each other and squabbling and bickering about heaven knows what. So let me just ask that question of our viewers who may be on the call with us tonight, Brother Thurman. What value system did they grow up with? What values were embedded in them from childhood through their teen years and early adult years? For example, most of us were introduced to Santa Claus as small children. And we rolled with Santa Claus till somewhere, maybe third, fourth grade, somebody pulled our coat and said, you know, there's no Santa Claus. And we had to figure that out. Now, that may be a little on the humor side, but there, at the same time, many of us came up in Black churches, and we saw the images of a white Jesus in those spaces. That was a little bit more difficult to come to grips with. Some of us did. Some of us still have not. And it's certainly raging on the African continent. I won't say everywhere you turn, but in a lot of places you look, in for example, we recently returned from Ghana, and there were billboards in a lot of prominent places with a huge image of a white Jesus. And I thought to myself, why is this image of a white Jesus on these billboards in Accra, Ghana, of all places? So let me just pause there, Brother Thurman, and get your reaction.
Well, that's a very, vital question that we really must go deep into. And family members, we ask you to join the conversation, participate in the conversation with your concise questions or comments, especially comments to your response to the question of what value system did you grow up with or grow up in. And you can reach us by telephone at 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789, and press the number 1 on your keypad so that you can be in the queue and we can open up the studio and let you participate with the other Uplifting Us members by telephone and also tuned in by internet radio. And also by internet radio, you can go to www.usliftingus.com. That's usliftingus.com. And when you open up to the home page, you look for the button that says Listen Live, and you can click on that, and you can listen live. But if you've got some concise response to what value system did you grow up in, please call in and participate in this conversation. Our liberation requires our participation. And I would say quickly, Brother Unky, that I grew up in, what was a horror story to me, the value systems. And you mentioned Satan, Santa, but there was so much more in movies that captured our mind in an anti-us way of programming, such as Snow White and Temple and songs that they sang, Make Me Whiter Than Snow, Oh Lord, and watching killer cowboys that's constantly killing people, and they still got it on now, and they actually got cowboy movies that come on. As far as I know, every day I've passed
every day, all day.
People. Yeah, every day, all day, and they've actually got some modern black actors in it that they regularly call them N-word and boy, and it's programming, and we've got black folks that actually watch this every week, if not every day, and so I grew up at a point watching killer cussing movies, that I use that term often because we need to speak language right, correctly with our people, like Martin Luther King, so we got to get the language right, and so these movies, it's about killing and blowing up and shooting people, killer cussing movies. We need to have liberated minds. We would take all of those kind of things that both you and I mentioned and others that's on the call that know what they grew up with, and we need to do like ancestor John Henry Clark said, throw it in the ash can or the trash can of history and don't use it anymore.
Absolutely.
And that's just one area. And so we grew up, and I grew up being indoctrinated and programmed in terms of eating. And were we eating for health? No, we were eating for our self-destructions, and we didn't know that. We didn't know, and at that time, Dr. Africa hadn't come out with the book Nutricide. And Nutricide, a definition for Nutricide, is the nutritional destruction of the black race or the African people. And many of us still, to this day, and I was with some people today, they're committing daily nutricide and getting very, very ill from the process and taking poisonous substances into their body, the so-called treat it, and having surgeries and having their organs taken out because they have been misled and miseducated and been programmed into the nutricide way of living. And it just goes on and on. And so I'll stop right there. And once again, family members, you've got questions, you've got comments on this subject of how did you grow up and how you, at what point did you awaken and start taking corrective action to liberate your mind and go forth and participate in liberating our communities, the liberation of our people. I'll stop right there.
Thank you. And your comments remind me, let's kind of walk through these values one by one, because if we don't understand the distinction between what are African values and what are Euro-American values, we'll call ourselves building Black and African institutions. In truth, we are only duplicating and replicating the same institutions that white folks have imposed upon us. The only difference is instead of white faces operating these systems, it'll be Black faces. So I'm indebted to Paul Ifeoma Grant, an ULU member, who wrote a paper, Ifowo Sowopopo, Economics, or All Pulled Together Economics. And the first point that he made about African values, and is certainly the point that Dr. Karenga captures in the Nguza Saba when he talks about unity, that in the African mind and in the African world, ultimate reality is spirit. It's not material. It's first spirit, and then spirit manifests in a material way. But if we, the European and the American value that their system is built on, says that material is ultimate reality. So in other words, in their world, if they can't see it, touch it, taste it, feel it, it's not real. And so they ridicule and make fun of Africans who believe or who acknowledge that spirit is ultimate reality. Even though we cannot see it, touch it, we know that there is a supreme intelligence or consciousness that is responsible for the physical world. And we have spent thousands and tens of thousands of years in communication and in communion with that supreme intelligence, and that has been the source of our greatness. In other words, this universal mind that is above all and beyond all, but yet is intimately connected to each of us, that is the source of how we understand and see the world. In other words, in the African worldview, spirit is ultimate reality or first reality. Everything stems from spirit. And so we need to be very careful about in dealing with people who make light of or who are dismissive of the importance of spirit. And that becomes very true. It becomes very important. For example, during the liberation struggles of the 1960s, 70s, and early 80s, there was a move where many of the liberation movements were studying Marxist and Mao Zedong thought and were building their movements towards socialism and communism based on the ideology of Karl Marx. And even the cooperative movements those cooperative movements that have their European counterparts, even though they are arguing for cooperative economics or an economic model where the people control the system, they still are based on materialism as ultimate reality. And so we as Africans have to be aware of the fact that we can learn certain things from those systems, but ultimately, we have to build an economic model that acknowledges spirit as ultimate reality. So when we talk about liberated minds building liberated communities, the first thing we have to establish is that for African people, both in our past and today, spirit is ultimate reality, and that the universe is one. This idea of separation is an illusion, and it is an illusion that the 1% use to manipulate and control the masses of people. And so we have to be clear that for us, then, spirit is ultimate reality, that this idea of unity is necessary because it is a reflection of how, in fact, the cosmos actually operates. And when we take unity as a serious goal and make sure that it is reflected in the institutions, in the businesses that we organize and build, now we're on the we're on the road to liberation, and we're not just replicating and duplicating the systems that Europeans run on. The other value that is so important in our organizing work is we operate with the understanding that community is, I won't say more important than the individual, but in order for any individual to be healthy, they have to be part of a healthy community. We're back to Ubuntu. We talked about that a little bit last week. I am because we are, and because we are, therefore I am. Africans do not make a separation between the individual and the community and putting the individual over the needs of the community. In the African consciousness, the individual only has meaning based on their interaction inside of a community that gives them their sense of identity, their purpose, their worth, their satisfaction, their meaning. Everything that is important to healthy living is derived from living inside of community. And so for an African value, community is of high importance, not the individual. So we know growing up in America, it's all about the rugged individual, the Marlboro man, the Lone Ranger who rides in on the white horse and solves the town's problem and then rides off into the sunset with his indigenous companion. But that's fantasy. The individual cannot accomplish anything on their own. They are, whether they acknowledge it or not, they are part of a larger group And so we have to be very clear. We're building institutions that place community at the forefront of our activity and recognize community as being, if the community is not healthy, then a few people running around with a lot of money in their pocket doesn't mean that's progress. If the community is falling down, if the buildings are run down, if the schools are inadequate, if there isn't adequate health care, the fact that a few people are, quote-unquote, living large, that is not a sign of progress. That, in fact, is a sign of decay and rot, and we have to call that out as such. But, again, that's a value proposition. Community is important. Spirit is important. This idea of working together to accomplish goals is important. Sharing of the wealth is important. Having a purpose is important. Being creative in the way that we speak, we move, we dance, we laugh, we create, all of that is part of vibrant life. And faith, this notion of even though I cannot see this invisible consciousness and intelligence, I have no doubt that it is real and that I am in communion with that intelligence. That's the value system that we as a people must begin to embrace and talk about and practice and be clear when people who are operating out of different values come around us. And we can point out and say, oh, no, that's individualism that you're talking about. That's going to get somebody hurt. Or that competition that you are constantly promoting is not what we need. Our community needs cooperation. I'll give you a quick example of that, Brother Thurman. There's a school district in Metro Atlanta, and one of its mission statements is saying, we want to educate our children so that they can compete on the global stage. Now, that sounds good, but let's ask ourselves the question, why do we want to raise our children to compete on the global stage? Why not raise our children to cooperate on the global stage? In other words, we go to school with students who are from other parts of the world, students from Africa, students from the Caribbean, students from Asian countries, students from European countries. Rather than seeing them as groups that we have to compete against, why don't we think about how we can cooperate and kind of structure the world together? I mean, we're striving to live in peace, if we come out of our school systems geared up to compete, then we find ourselves at odds, and we can't use our collective wisdom and genius to build a better world. And so something as simple as a mission statement, whether we are training, whether we're educating our children to compete or to cooperate, makes all the difference in the world. But again, this is the issue of our value system. And to your point, Brother Thurman, you're right. The movies we watched growing up, I remember when we would play cowboys and Indians, nobody wanted to be the Indian because the Indians always wound up dead. But what we did not understand was, in truth, we were the indigenous population. And we were being warred upon by these Euro-Americans, and we did not understand that instead of trying to imitate the Euro-Americans, we should have been strategizing how we can, you know, through cooperation, build our strength to survive and to thrive. And then I do want to come back to that whole white Jesus piece. Because certainly we know from the teachings of Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, you know, if you've got a picture on the wall and it's a picture of a white Jesus, we say, okay, well, this is Jesus. Well, who is Jesus? Well, Jesus is the Son of God. Well, if Jesus is white and Jesus is the Son of God, what does that say? What does that tell the brain about who God must be? And so without them even stating it overtly, just by putting a picture up of a white Jesus and saying this is the Son of God, they've made a statement that, in fact, God is white. Now, nothing could be further from the truth, but that was the image that was ingrained in many of us, and it took a lot of work to get to the place where we could image a black Jesus and begin to combat this idea that God is white. Our studies told us that all of the white imagery of God and Jesus being white came about as a result of Michelangelo's depiction of the Sistine Chapel. And so these European artists were commissioned by the Pope in the 15th century to create artwork reflecting a white God. And that was the artwork that then was communicated to around the world and allowed them for centuries to present themselves as gods. And unfortunately, too many of us bought into that. And so white folks have gotten a pass for all of these years. And now the covers are finally being pulled back to say, no, that behavior that you guys are demonstrating is in fact demonic, it's destructive, and it cannot continue to operate like that. So I hope we're getting clearer about worldview, because until we change our worldview, we can't liberate our minds. We have to see that this creative power, this universal, invisible intelligence, that we were the first people on the planet, and so therefore, if the first people on the planet were melanated black folks, then obviously the creator is melanated. That doesn't make the point to say that, but let's just say that whatever this universal intelligence and consciousness is and is doing, that we as people are created in the image and likeness of that intelligence. And so rather than seeing ourselves as second-class or third-class citizens, we have to see ourselves as divine women and men. And that, I think, Brother Thurman, mm-hmm. is an area that a lot of people are still struggling. But I think that is a necessary starting point when we think about the work of rebuilding civilization. Because that ultimately, when you start talking about building a new economic system, what you are really talking about is building a new civilization based on these African values. Let me pause there. There might be some questions. I think there may even be a hand up, someone trying to get into the conversation, Brother Thurman.
Yes, thank you so much with the powerful good word that you're bringing us, and just hold on. We do have a hand up, and we want to recognize the family member, and then we will continue on. Caller with the last four numbers, 3440, 3440, please give us your name and tell us where you're calling from with your comment.
Yeah, greetings, brothers. This is Brother Shabaka calling from South Florida. First, let me make sure you can hear me. Can you hear me well?
Yes. Yes.
Very, very good. Great points that you all are conversing. I want to jump back quickly to the question that Brother Auntie asked, and I was dealing with the values that we had to run up. It was sort of mixed. And let me tell you what I mean by mixed. You know, we were seeing, you know, we were getting a lot of the stuff that was imported from the European. But remember, we were in a segregated community. And so there was a value system, and there was a community or at least neighborhood system, all right, that operated. But when we integrated, all right, all, you know, we got the remnants of their negative system as a consequence of the television, some aspects of the radio, but then for the most part, when the radio came in, which begins to allow for the transmission of the negative values, and then the television reinforced that, you know, we had, being segregated, we innately rested on what we could capture from our African experience that was passed on, even though it was many generations away from the continent. So there was a semblance, you know, we didn't have a structurally the things that Manolana Coringa introduced to us, and of course, our understanding of Maat, but we had a value system, and it was based on the church. The church was a little bit more spiritual, but it got material as the dominant sector began to use its tools, all right, to reinforce its materialism, and so. I recall that as I was growing up, you know, and was very perplexed and confused as a consequence of that, you know, growing up, going to school, going to when integration started, going to the universities, the colleges, and stuff like that, very confused. Now, confused to the point, and we really need to point this out. If we are spiritual beings, all right, then and in a material form, then we should manifest, you know, that which tends to promote life, which is spiritual. All right, but you don't get that in the U.S. Right now, the U.S. is funding wars in Ukraine with a lot of people dying. Okay, as a consequence of U.S. effort in the war. Now, I'm trying to point out the material and its interest in sustaining death. All right. So it's doing that. In addition to doing that, you know, I had a conversation, you know, with some younger people, and we was on the discussion of sex. I said, well, sex is what nature uses in order to procreate the species so that it can continue. All right? All right. They thought it was to have a good feeling. All right, so we have a lot of education to do because people think that sex is to have a good feeling. All right, not necessarily that its ultimate objective is procreation. And then when you look at the little to have a good feeling, then you can begin to see the imposition of these argument around gender identities, because it's all about what? Having a good feeling, not necessarily for procreation and continuation of the species that came out of creation, all right, from creation. So I think that when we examine these things, we got a lot of stuff to uncover, a lot of stuff to unfold. And then don't let me get on the poison, because Brother Thurman can talk about that in the consumption of the food that we eat. And so he does a very good job of pointing that out. But we got to look at everything around us is pointing to create death, all right, among the populace and particularly people of African ancestry, to create death, all right, and even to create death among themselves, because attempts to reduce the population, which makes it more manageable for capitalists, all right, to control the resources. You talk about the competition thing later, earlier. Well, the competition is because there is a struggle to control the resources by a small few. If there wasn't a competition to control the resources by a small few, then you know competition would not seem plausible. You know, it's the cooperation, you know, to acquire, working together to get the resources necessary to sustain life, and to do a lot of other things. All right, well, I said enough. I just wanted to veggie back, as you say, veggie back off a number of points that you've made. And I think points are well taken. And, Brother, keep the effort going, keep the work going. We really need to, we need to drive that in, because there's a lot of confusions coming about. And even the church, all right, the black church is supporting some of the stuff that is coming down from the European model. And let me stop there. And thank you for allowing me the opportunity to talk.
And thank you, brother. And Brother Ankti, would you like to respond? And anything else you want to bring forth?
Yeah, I want to thank Brother Shabaka for his comments. I think all of us are, well, I won't say all of us, but those of us at a certain age, certainly Shabaka, myself, you, Brother Tom, are in that category. We remember a time when our community, because of segregation, practiced values that were very different from white communities. The idea of cooperation was prevalent everywhere. The idea of faith in an invisible creator was standard. The notion that we took care of each other was practiced in front of our faces all the time. I remember my mother's sister got sick, and she lived in Rome, Georgia. We lived in New York, and my mother, we drove down to Georgia and brought her sister and her sister's three children to live with us in New York. I mean, talk about collective work and responsibility. That would be unheard of today in some places. To Shabaka, to your point, I think most of us would agree those were much better times for us as a community. The other point that I think that you made that certainly is critical that we do not lose sight of is the transformation that has impacted the black church. That used to be a place where our black values, African values, were practiced to a very high degree. The whole, we didn't call it ma'at, but truth was important. Righteousness and justice was important. We acknowledged that there was a cosmic order to the universe. We certainly, to have balance and harmony, and reciprocity, the idea that if you went to someone's house to visit, you took something with you as a gift. It didn't have to be elaborate, but just as an expression to say, let me share something from my household with your household. This was just standard behavior. But it reflected this deeply ingrained African value system. I think the right, the extreme right, did a deep dive and study of the black church as a result of the success of the civil rights movement. And it was because of the effectiveness of the civil rights movement that a concerted effort was made to undermine the theology in the black church. I mean, it had always been problematic, but now it was like, okay, this idea of the black church being a prophetic community, and certainly Dr. King and Malcolm were shining examples of that prophetic tradition. Even Dr. Cornel West is an example of that prophetic tradition. It was like, we can't have any more of those come out. And so we went from a prophetic community to a community that was focused on prosperity. And many of us remember the shift to the prosperity gospel. It was all about your shiny car and your fat wallet and your big bank account and your house. Once you had those things going on, then clearly you were blessed. And so, you know, then we get these license plate tags, blessed, you know, that's tacked on to whatever it is car that we're driving. I won't mention any brand names. I'm not trying to throw shade on anybody. But this idea that material acquisition was the sign of God's favor. Now, that's something that's happened over the last 20, 30 years in black church communities, because I remember prior to that, nobody paid a whole lot of attention to what you rode up in. The main thing was, were you able to get to church, and could we have a good fellowship in the spirit? We really weren't that focused on the material aspects of our lives, and so that shift has done terrible damage to the work of the black church, so much so that the black church now is on the sidelines, where it used to be at the forefront of providing leadership to our community. And again, I think that shift in the church also represents a shift in black values. In other words, we've abandoned the black value system, and now we've become more and more comfortable with being very competitive, being very individualistic, being very materialistic, and certainly we are okay with the level of violence necessary for capitalism to continue its global domination. We recognize the wars that are raging, Ukraine, the Middle East, now Niger. And we can't understand fully what's going on in Niger. It is interesting that there's a pipeline that is planned to run through Niger all the way to the Mediterranean that will then be a source of natural gas and fossil fuel for Europe to tap into. Well, it just so happens that the democratic government of Niger was overthrown by a military coup, and the leaders of that military coup were trained at Fort Benning, Georgia, what used to be called the School of the Americas. So we've got people who look like us in terms of skin color, but who are doing the bidding of these capitalists, killing their own people, our own people, and somehow it's being made to look like this is a struggle for democracy, and nothing could be further from the truth. But because we have been disconnected from so much of African life, that it seems like Niger is on the other side of the planet. You know, we don't even talk about what's going on in Niger. We spend more time talking about what's going on in Ukraine than we do about what's going on in Niger. But coming back to this idea of worldview, your worldview allows that kind of world to exist when you are in alignment with those values. So to the degree that we have become capitalistic, then we are okay with a world that exists with that much killing and death and destruction, when 90% of that is at the hands of U.S. foreign policy. And we as a people in North America are going to have to really step up and shut that capacity down. And that's part of the work that we do as we build our own economic institutions so we're not so dependent on these American corporations to provide our livelihoods. Brother Thurman, I do want to raise an additional point and get this in the conversation for tonight. We said in a previous broadcast we were asking the question, are we free? And tonight's topic is liberated minds, building liberated communities for the liberation of our people. So the theme is liberation. And the presupposition behind all of that is that we're not free. And it's amazing, not only are Africans not free, but if you live in the United States of America and if you earn your money based on an hourly wage, you are not free either. Because that is where this theft on a grand scale is taking place. The surplus value that our labor is creating is stolen. We are paid a wage, $8 an hour, $10 an hour, $15 an hour, $20 an hour, maybe even $30 an hour. We're paid a wage, and we consider ourselves fortunate to get that. Meanwhile, the entire surplus that our labor has generated is pocketed by the 1%, and we wonder why the income gap keeps widening. And so that is why we have to move away from private ownership of the means of production to community-owned means of production. Too often, we do not understand that gap. For example, before COVID, most fast food places, if you $8 an hour, $9 an hour, $10 an hour, that was kind of the pay range, right? And if you'd been there for 3 or 4 or 5 years, maybe you were nibbling at $13 or $14 an hour. COVID hits, everything gets shut down, and then when they try to crank it back up, they discover that nobody is willing to work and risk their health and their lives for $10 an hour. So now the starting pay of McDonald's work is $15 an hour. That was unheard of 5 years ago. People were fighting for what they called a living wage, and they considered $15 an hour a living wage 3 years ago. And we know now that, you know, $15 is really just an entry point to being able to have a little something. It's not $15 an hour is not a living wage. Let's not fool ourselves. But what it shows is that when COVID, well, what they call COVID ended and people went back to work, but they insisted on a higher pay, all the years that they had accepted less, and that's just the way things are. Now, all of a sudden, when the need is made very clear that without these workers, these businesses can't run, so now they're starting people at $15 an hour. Isn't it interesting? All of a sudden, there's money available to pay people a much better wage. That's what I mean by wage slavery. And as long as we allow private ownership of the means of production, we will always be in a situation of this widening income gap, where the 1% walk out of these businesses putting thousands and thousands of dollars in their pocket, while the people who are generating the wealth are going home with a couple of $100 and just enough money to get back and forth to work for the next week. That's what Marx called the primary contradiction of capitalism: social production of the wealth, private appropriation of the surplus. In other words, the people generated the money, and the rich folks stole it. And that is why this system has to be replaced with a community-owned and operated means of production and ownership of the wealth. We're not talking about redistribution of the wealth. What we're talking about is the people who generate the wealth have to be at the table to discuss and determine how that wealth is going to be distributed. That's why the Hollywood writers are on strike. They are desperately trying to generate or bargain for higher income for their work, because they know that these AI software programs are soon going to be cranking out movies and scripts and TV productions without them. And so to protect their livelihoods both now and into the future, they've got to be at the table helping to make the decisions about how is the wealth that this product is generating, how is that going to be distributed? And certainly the people who are creating the dramas should get the lion's share of the surplus. Now, that's a fundamental change in the model. And so this is going to be a very difficult struggle. But we need to be fully clear on what is at stake and understand that this is why people who generate the surplus must be the ones to control the economic institutions. And that's why the point that you make so often, Brother Thurman, either we control the economics of our communities or forever be at the mercy of people who do. Let me pause there because we're right up against the 10 o'clock hour.
And, Brother, you're so right about forever being at the mercy. And we're in a state of emergency. War has been waged on us. It has never stopped for a long, 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 long time. And as the war continues to be waged, now more than ever, we need to have a collective, clarified worldview about everything, including survival. And we are being pressed. And if we have a bunch of confusion in our head when it comes to the need to circle up and have each other's back for survival and for food and all of the shelter and all of those things, if we don't know how to live in harmony because our worldview has us confused, as things escalate, we'll just be in trouble because we are confused and our worldview is not our own. And we have the opportunity. And thank you, Brother Unki, and thank you, Brother Shibaka, and all of the listeners by internet radio and by telephone. And we must continue this conversation because another way of looking at the worldview is it refers to someone's set of answers to all the big questions in life. And we need to answer all of the big questions in our lives and make sure that it's correct and we got clarity and not confusion. And Brother Unki, thank you. Yes, Brother.
Brother, let me share this one piece of information with our listeners. And, I mean, with all of the horror and trauma that the people in Hawaii are experiencing as a result of and the hurricane winds that devastated those places, they're saying now as they're reeling from that blow, these corporate people are coming into that space trying to buy up the land at bargain prices, right?
Yes.
I mean, it is just devastating. There's a book called The Shock Doctrine by Naomi Klein, and she says this is the agenda that these neoconservatives and far-right movement are doing. First, government must remove all rules and regulations standing in the way of the accumulation of profits. So you're always going to hear this deregulation, take away the rules. Second, they should sell off any assets they own that corporations could be running at a profit. So a lot of municipal districts are selling off the waterworks. One of the things that we saw starting years ago is they moved from city garbage worker pickups to these private garbage companies. So we see that going on. And then the third thing that they do is to cut back funding of social programs. So part of the reason Hawaii was so devastated is that for years they have cut back on social programs, and then when this catastrophe strikes, they have even fewer resources to help the people bond in the midst of this. This is only going to escalate and continue. So we really have to be crystal clear about our value system and our worldview so we understand why it is that things are taking the shape that they do, so we can craft a response that enables us to live and to thrive even in the midst of the system decaying that they have been depending on and benefiting from for hundreds of years. Thank you, Brother Sermon.
And thank you, Brother Umpty. And family, we must continue and expand on this subject of worldview. And do keep in take note that this tonight's conversation is being recorded and it will be in the Blog Talk archives in the next 2 or 3 days. And also, Brother Umpty mentioned the previous conversation that he led Thursday, August the 10th, which was last Thursday, and the title was, Are Any African People Free? Get clarity on that subject, and that's in the Blog Talk archives also. And Brother Umpty mentioned that word, catastrophe is coming pad. We've got to get our worldview in order, and it's not to be somebody else. We've already suffered, and we've not done well because we've got others' worldview and we've got to get the others out of our head. And family members, it's time to get ready to go into a rest and recuperation and your dream time and revelations and all of those things from your inner being and not from some made-up savior. Go into your inner being. And Brother Umpty, once again, we and all of the listeners by telephone and by internet radio, we thank you for all of the work that you have continuously done to liberate and reawaken our people. And family, we'll be back here next Thursday from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, another informative Dare to Win radio program.